But who is it that makes the transition? Who is it that achieves the noble quest? It is man. It is the monk who is the preacher of the sutra, that is to say, the sutra of golden light. As I said at the beginning of the lecture, the monk who is the preacher of the sutra is an anonymous figure. In three chapters, a goddess comes forward and promises to protect the monk who preaches the sutra. But nothing whatever is said about the monk, at least not in these chapters. It's as though he is simply a hook on which the goddesses hang their vows, hang their promises. However, something is said about him in chapter 13, the chapter on Susambhava. Or rather, something is said about a preacher of the sutra, a monk called Ratnochaya. In this chapter, the Buddha himself is speaking. He's speaking about his previous lives. He says that there was once a king called Susambhava, which means happily born, or born of happiness. And he was the ruler of all four continents. And one night he had a dream. In his dream he saw the monk Ratnochaya. The name Ratnochaya incidentally means jewel heap or precious accumulation. And the king saw him shining in the midst of the sun. Apparently he was brighter even than the sun, and he was expounding the sutra of golden light. And on waking up from his dream, the king felt extremely happy. And he went to see the Buddha's disciples. And he inquired after Ratnochaya. Ratnochaya at that time was elsewhere. He was sitting in a cave. He was studying and reflecting on the Sutra of Golden Light. So the disciples took the king to Ratnochaya. The king worshipped Ratnochaya, and we are told he worshipped his feet. And he invites him to expound the Sutra of Golden Light. And Ratnochaya agrees to do this. So the king very joyfully makes all the appropriate preparations, and Ratnochaya expounds the sutra. The king, needless to say, is greatly impressed, greatly moved. He's so impressed, so moved, that he sheds tears of joy. And eventually he presents all his possessions, all his property. He presents, we're told, the four continents filled with jewels to the order of Rasnasikin, who was the Buddha at that time. The Buddha, Shakyamuni, then reveals that he himself was Susambhava, and that the Buddha Akshobhya was Ratnochaya. So here, something at least is said about the preacher of the sutra, or about a preacher of the sutra. And what is said underlines one particular point. The preacher of the sutra is always a monk, always a bhikshu. The great goddess Sarasvati promises to protect the monk who preaches the sutra. The earth goddess Dridha promises to protect the monk who preaches the sutra, as does the great goddess Shri, as we shall see next week. So this raises two questions. What is a monk? And why should a monk in particular be the preacher of the sutra? Now, we must remember that the Sutra of Golden Light is a Mahayana sutra, and the Mahayana invariably attaches more importance to the spirit than to the letter of the Buddha's teaching, though this does not mean that it ignores or neglects the letter. In the same way, in the same spirit, it attaches more importance to the realities of the spiritual life than it does to the appearances of the spiritual life. For the Mahayana, therefore, the monk is not just one who observes certain minor disciplinary precepts, not someone who shaves his head and wears a yellow robe, though he may, of course, also do these things. These things are not excluded. The monk, according to the Mahayana, is one who is totally committed to the spiritual life, totally committed to his personal spiritual development, totally committed to the noble quest, the quest for the unconditioned, and committed to it not for his own sake only, but for the sake of all living beings. The Mahayana monk is therefore a bodhisattva, at least in intention. He's a bodhisattva, even if the bodhicitta has not actually arisen. Now, you cannot be totally committed unless you are free. Only a free man can commit himself. You cannot be totally committed unless you are free from all mundane ties, all mundane responsibilities. So what are the two biggest mundane ties? The two biggest mundane responsibilities. So far as a man at least is concerned, they are first a wife and family, and two, wage earning work. And the two, of course, usually go together. The monk, therefore, is celibate. That is to say, he is unmarried, he has no wife, no children, no family ties, no family responsibilities. The English word monk means one who is on his own, one who is single, solitary, alone. But this does not necessarily mean that he is a hermit. He may in fact be living as a member of a spiritual community, may be living as a member of a monastic community. The fact that he is alone, the fact that he is a monk, means that he does not belong to any mundane group, not belong to any group that is held together by purely mundane ties of blood, emotional dependence, or common worldly interests. Within the spiritual community, one can be alone, and one can be with others. Within the group, however, one is neither alone nor with others. The monk has also no worldly occupation. He's not gainfully employed. He doesn't work for a living. He doesn't make anything. He doesn't produce anything. He doesn't earn anything. Economically speaking, he is a parasite. He's a spiritual, one might even say, a glorious spiritual parasite. He depends for food and clothing and so on others, as we shall be seeing in the course of next week's lecture. So the monk is one who leads a purely spiritual life, who's totally committed to spiritual life, who has no worldly ties, no worldly responsibilities. The monk therefore lives what some of the old Christian writers called the angelic life. Monks live, as it were, in heaven. They live like angels. In heaven, there's neither marriage nor giving in marriage, no ploughing or sowing or reaping. So the monastic life is therefore the happy life. And I can testify to this from my own experience and observation, at least so far as Buddhist monks are concerned. I can't answer for the others. In fact, I've no hesitation in saying that monastic life is the best and happiest of all lives. In India, I not only lived as a monk myself, I had contact with monks of many different schools and many different nationalities. Theravada monks and Mahayana monks, Zen monks, Nichiren monks, Gelugpa monks, Nyingmapa monks. Some were Sinhalese, some were Burmese, there were Thais, Vietnamese, Cambodians, Laotians, Chinese, Tibetans, Nepalese. And what was one thing that one noticed about them? They were all noticeably more happy than the lay people. Even more happy than the Buddhist lay people. The Buddhist lay people were happy enough, in all conscience, compared with the Hindus. Huh? But the Buddhist monks were even happier than the Buddhist lay people. Now you might think this odd. After all, the lay people had wives, children, jobs, money, motor cars, all conceivable pleasures and enjoyments, etc. But more often than not, one saw they looked quite miserable. The monks usually had none of these things. Most monks, indeed, that I met, that I knew, owned little more than their robes, their begging bowl, and a few books. Maybe a fountain pen or even the odd camera. And many of them took no solid food after midday at all. After midday, they took only tea. Some of them were so strict they didn't even take milk in their tea. Yet, they were all remarkably happy, remarkably contented, and remarkably friendly. It was really a joy to be with them. However, I won't say anything more. I might get carried away by the flood of reminiscences. I might even want to go back to India. Anyway, I hope that you now have some idea of what a monk is. That is to say, a real monk, a real bhikshu, not just someone who has formally received monastic ordination. The monk is one who is totally committed to the spiritual life, who has no worldly ties or worldly responsibilities, who is celibate, that is to say, unmarried, without wife and children, who does not work for a living, who is supported by others, who receives food and clothing and so on from others. Moreover, the monk is one who leads an angelic life, who is happy. In other words, the monk is one who has made the transition from the conditioned to the unconditioned, from samsara to nirvana, from nature to enlightenment, or who is very definitely in process of making that transition. The monk is one who has at least set out on the noble quest. But of course, it's not easy to make the transition from the conditioned to the unconditioned. It's not easy to leave samsara behind, however miserable. It's not easy to give up the world. After all, samsara is not only outside us. The world is not only outside us. They are also within us. Man is a being with a dual nature. On the one hand, he is the child of earth. On the other, he is the offspring of heaven. He is part of nature, but at the same time, he transcends nature. He feels the gravitational pull of the conditioned. He also feels the gravitational pull of the unconditioned. So man is a being in conflict with himself, in conflict within himself. We may even go so far as to say that man is a battleground. He's a battleground of opposing forces. There's a great battle taking place in man himself. The forces of nature are fighting, as it were, with the forces of enlightenment. Tridha, the earth goddess, with the golden light. So the monk is one in whom this conflict has been resolved, in whom this battle has been won. The monk is one whose natural energies have submitted to the golden light, are completely at the service of the golden light. The monk is one who, in Christian phraseology, has overcome the world. So it's obvious now why the monk is the preacher of the sutra. The preacher of the sutra of golden light. It's obvious why the earth goddess places her head against the soles of his feet. Only he can be the preacher of the sutra of golden light who has identified himself with the golden light. The monk has made the transition from the conditioned to the unconditioned, from samsara to nirvana, from nature to enlightenment, or is in process of making it. He has identified himself with the golden light, become, as it were, one with the golden light, at least to some extent. So he is able to be the preacher of the sutra of golden light. Ultimately, of course, it is the Buddha himself who is the preacher of the sutra. It is the Buddha himself who is protecting.